Welcome to the golf edition of Hooked on Sport. This is South Australia's Golf Wrap, where we uncover the stories, personalities and moments that define golf across South Australia and beyond. It's time to talk golf with sports commentator Ben Hook and state golf representative Sophie Hilditch.
G'day Wallace, hello everyone, welcome back to another episode of Hooked on Sport. Great to have your company once again. We've had an excellent break, but it is time to refocus our energies and interests in the world of golf from South Australia and beyond. And I love taking the opportunity to do it with Sophie Hilditch and all of her expertise and insight. Soph, welcome back.
Welcome back, Hooky. Have you had a good break from the podcast? We were kind of just running at full steam ahead for about 3 months there, I want to say.
It was nice to get to bed before about 2 a.m. on a Monday night after recording and all of the post work that goes into these sorts of things. So yeah, it's been a great break, mate. And we probably took about a week or two more than we planned. So we might have to put a few issues on the agenda that we parked over the course of the couple of weeks, in particular the PGA Championship. But why don't we start where we normally do, and that's with Sophie Starr.
Hooky, this one kind of is a bit personal to my heart. And I think if it wasn't my Sophie Starr, I might have a domestic fight happening at the end of tonight's episode. So I'm going to have to go with an amazing, incredible hole-in-one. It was a solo hole-in-one. It wasn't a team one. It was at the 12th hole at Royal Adelaide. It was a 5-iron. I believe it was a pure strike into a bit of a breeze. I reckon it was about 15 kilometres per hour, gusting up to 20. It's pitched about 4 feet before the hole and just trickled in. And that shot was hit by the one and only Darcy Hilditch. And I am very, very happy for him. We had celebrations. We've continued to have celebrations the whole week. That was hit on Wednesday morning, Ben. And I still think he's running on a bit of a high and he hasn't come down quite just yet.
So if this is about a week old and I kind of had sort of somehow, but somewhere between forgotten it and kind of repressed the whole memory of it from my mind, Darcy O'Neill, a hole in one on the 12th at Royal Adelaide. And I just want to clarify here that the two of you completely ganged up on me, were horrendous to me when I had my hole in one a little over a year ago at the Grange Golf Club, hit a nice little 5-iron as well that spun sideways and trickled in. All I recall is two things happened. One is you claimed it for yourself because it was an Ambrose day and you were the team captain, and Darcy bagged me for what I was wearing, which just happened to be a black pair of shorts and a dark t-shirt, and had a crack at me for my dress sense, of all people, I might add, being critical of dress. I did see a photo of his hole-in-one and the belt that he worn should be burned and the ashes buried 10 feet deep, never to be seen again. But yeah, so my whole recollection of my hole-in-one was sort of scorn and criticism. And here you are parroting out his own lines about what a crisp shot it was. It looked beautiful, absolutely flew perfectly in the air. Can't you just talk it down a little?
Well, I just want it known. I actually didn't claim the hole-in-one for myself. I claimed it for the team, not just me. I didn't mind the belt that Darcy was wearing, and I'll have you know that your own wife, Sarah Chia, when you announced your hole-in-one over text message, just gave you a thumbs up. So I think this is your own gripe. You got to send it home.
It wasn't even the thumbs up. It was like, you know, where you press and hold on the screen and
just
it
like
comes
it
up with those little range of options, and I just got the thumbs up reply. Yeah, that was pretty tough too. In fact, yeah, I can't limit the level of scorn that I've copped to the Hilditch family. It extends out to the Hook family itself as well. So can I give you Ben's best, which is on a slightly more serious note, but I just want to sing the praises of Travis and Jess Head for the way they have dealt with what's been a pretty ugly issue over the last 36 hours. So for those of you who aren't aware, Travis Head is currently playing in the IPL. His team played against Virat Kohli's team on Saturday night. There was a bit of byplay, a bit of sledging, if you like, that went on between Travis and Virat, which ended up with Virat refusing to shake Travis's hand. Now, I've got to say, that would have been easy for Travis and Jess. So Travis and Jess then, as a result, were on the receiving end of a pretty horrendous social media campaign from what has been described by Bharat Sundaraiah, a good friend of ours, as the Kohli army, and that they can be pretty nasty and pretty destructive. So the fact that they have kept their noses clean and haven't bitten back at Virat, I'm very, very impressed with. So I just wanted to give them a bit of a shout out with that. Can I just make the point as well? Virat Kohli had to know what he was doing there. He had to know that by refusing to shake Travis Head's hand, that that was going to blow up all over social media and that there was going to be a lot of blowback against the Head family. And I think that's really unfortunate that he chose that path. He's not an idiot, Virat Kohli. He knows what he's doing. And he would have known full well that that was going to be largely what the reaction was. It's really important for him to come out and apologise and just say that the sort of behaviour that goes on around that is not on. I'll be interested to see if we get that sort of an apology. Unfortunately, Virat is so big in the game and has so many around him that enable that sort of behaviour and just allow that sort of stuff to fester is a real problem with Indian cricket. But in and amongst all of that, to Travis Head and to Jess Head, we're really sad that you were confronted by that, but I just admire the way you've handled it under all sorts of adversity. So that's Ben's Best for the week. The Head family, Travis and Jess, dealing with something pretty nasty in India, and we hope that that cools off and that they can get home in a couple of weeks safely and he can put a couple of his feet up before the Test series in Bangladesh gets underway in the not-too-distant future. He'll have the 100 as well, I suspect. So anyway, Soph, that's my best bet. That's my Ben's Best. That's your Sophie Star. Can we just focus back? It's a couple of weeks old now, but I just thought I'd touch base with you on your reflections of Pennant Golf. Wonderful season. We had a wonderful time covering it. You were fantastic in your own right. Went so close in that final going down to the Grange. Of course, Cooyonga beating Grange in the Simpson Cup Grand Final. But there is so much to be proud of, not just with our coverage, but with the competition as a whole. Is there, I guess, some topics in and around Pennant Golf that you are really pleased to have seen where it's been and where it's come from over the last 2, 3, 4, 5 years?
Yeah, I think, look, it starts all the way back to the start of it, which I was really pleased when Golf Australia, South Australia asked me to do the opening season launch for the Pennant season. And I think you might have been away in New Zealand at the time with the Asia Pacific, but Wallace and me got to tag along and I emceed the event down at the Golf Park, which is open, Adelaide Golf Park, which is opening near the Adelaide Airport. And it just showed that Golf SA was showing a lot more interest in Pennant Golf and wanting to put it a bit more up on a pedestal, which is where I think it should be. And that event really set the scene for the rest of the season. And I think it meant a lot for the clubs and it meant a lot for people to follow along a bit more closely.
It's a really good point, and I completely agree with you. I think Golf Australia's enthusiasm for both the Simpson and the Sanderson Cup stood out to me. Dave Watson's driving it. He comes from a cricket background. He has a very, very strong understanding of the nature of Premier level sport. So whether it's Premier cricket or Premier netball or SNFL football, he is across that and he is trying to elevate Pennant Golf to that level. And I think it is really commendable that that's the way they're going. So if that's the good, what's the bad? What are some of the things that you would identify, Soph, as maybe, not that it's bad, but it's something that we could really look towards tidying up in the coming years?
I'm probably a bit biased and I'm always going to look at a bit more of a Sanderson point of view. But with the Sanderson, I've just got to say the season's too short for me, Ben. At the moment, there's 5 teams in Sanderson, which I, one, think is pretty sad. And I don't think it's showing off the best of the South Australian women that we have. And we don't have enough opportunity to showcase that. We've only 4 games in the minor rounds. So I think that's my biggest disappointment. It's a long preseason of training. And then to only have, potentially, only have 4 games if you don't make that top 3 and make it into the finals is pretty upsetting and pretty sad. And it feels like a lot of work for such a short season.
Is there a way to expanding it that you can identify? Or is it, I mean, it's obviously not simple. There's no magic fix here. But we're talking about only 20 players stepping out each week in the Premier competition. You compare that with hockey, that'll have 90. SNFL football is all 8 clubs now. So that's got, well, the best part of 200. Cricket is probably one I put an asterisk alongside. That's interesting. That hasn't really expanded. That's still at 5 teams. Well, so the 4 only going around each week because it's a 5-team competition. So therefore it's 44. But golf, considering the explosion it's had, considering the popularity of it, considering that it's an Olympic sport, there has to be a way to broaden out the base of your elite club competition, do you think?
Yeah, look, I think so. I think there's, like you identified, there's not an easy solution to fixing it. It's been an issue, a long-standing issue as well. This isn't the first time that we've only had 4 games in the minor round. I actually should have put it in the good. The new final structure for the Sanderson Cup with the 3 teams making it into finals was an excellent decision. It made the last game, particularly for my team, way more important against Kyonga. The winner of either of that match, the winner of those matches would have progressed into the finals, kept the season interesting rather than you win one game and you're in final straight away. You kind of lose interest if that happens to be your first game, your first win. So that has been exciting. But I mean, it's kind of, and we've identified it before and we've spoken about it, particularly in women's sport, women tend to just flock and juniors tend to flock to wherever club has the most juniors and the most women. And unfortunately, that tends to be the big four. And I'm talking Grange, Glenelg, Cooey and Royal. They have amazing practice facilities. There's often sponsorship opportunities coming out of those clubs. And it just
maybe better coaching.
Maybe better coaching, but obviously there's some seriously good coaches out in the foothills in particular. So I think that means that those top four often end up being at the top of the leaderboard. And I know that the Vines had a really good season down at Pike, and so they ended up finishing third on the ladder, which was an exceptional feat from them. But normally it's the big four in both Sanderson and Pike. And I think that's a bit of a shame. I think Blackwood didn't have their best season. The team was definitely stronger than what it has been in the past. But for me, I'd be interested in seeing if we can get a foothills team together and whether or not we can get people like Christine Trimmer and Amanda Heapy from the Vines joining up with some of the Blackwood stronghold. But then from there, potentially putting a fringe team or even two fringe teams. Once the big four choose the teams that they want and the squads that they want, is there an opportunity for us to get some of those juniors that aren't getting showcased in Sanderson and aren't quite there just yet but are playing in Pike and an exceptional players? Why can't we push them into a fringe team and see whether or not we can have a bit more of a competitive Sanderson Cup?
Like it, Soph. There is an issue, isn't there, that Lucy Keelock would undoubtedly be in the best 25 players in the competition, except she's not in the competition because she's playing at Grange and playing in the second team. And I do think that's unfortunate. She's always going to be a Grange player, right? But I would love to come up with some sort of system that allows Lucy to be placed on loan to a club like Blackwood and she can actually get some games under her belt. That would be far better for her development than, you know, having a blowout result in the Pike Cup week in, week out. I think that's going to be a very, very difficult sell to the big four clubs who pride themselves on, I mean, Grange, you could tell this year, in the women in particular, they were trying to sweep the whole competition. I mean, it stood out when they had the bye and it was the Junior Interstate Series and they sent half of their Sanderson Cup team back down to play in Pike Cup. You got Louise Glennon and Caitlin Roberts both playing in a Pike Cup match, which, look, they didn't do anything wrong, the Grange. You would argue whether that's really in the spirit of the competition for that to play out the way it did. But that just showed to me that they were pretty determined to try and sweep the lot. But I don't know that that's in the best interest of the competition. I don't think it's necessarily in the spirit of the competition. And I would love to see someone like Lucy get an opportunity to go and play on loan to Blackwood for 1 year. And then, yeah, if you need her the next year, then she comes back. Now, that takes a bit of give and take from the Tier 1 clubs, and it's going to take some rules around squad caps and those sorts of challenges and maybe a draft as well, how all those sorts of things work. And they're the sorts of things that I'd like us to at least explore, because at the moment we don't get the best 25 playing Sanderson Cup and we don't necessarily get the best 56 playing Simpson Cup. And I do think that has an adverse effect on our development overall. And it creates a lopsided nature of the competition, Soph. So you identified Blackwood. They got 1.5 points out of a possible 20 this year. They were both, those 1.5 were all due to Isabel Watson, who was only just come back into the team from Royal Adelaide, wasn't she? And Thaxted were 10 from 49 and had sort of checked out with about 2 weeks to go, haven't they? So look, there's always going to be winner losers in this competition, and you always expect that the Tier 1 clubs are going to have that little bit of an advantage. But if we can just narrow that advantage a little bit, I think that would be good for the competition as a whole.
Yeah, that's an interesting point of view. I don't mind the drafting scheme, but I do think you're going to have trouble convincing the big four to send a player somewhere else. But I mean, if it's in the best interest, I think it is a good idea in terms of, I think Lucy Keelock was in our junior state team, I believe. I think we had Adele in our junior state team, and it would have been great experience for them to be coming up against girls like Reagan Denton and Millie Winnie and having that competitive practice.
Yeah, as a great experience to go into a junior interstate series where, quite frankly, we performed pretty poorly for what you would expect for the talent of those young girls. Soph, we've done the good, we've done the bad. What about the ugly? What's something that's a real problem at the moment that needs to be fixed somehow and fixed quickly?
Well, I don't know if it needs to be fixed quickly. The one thing that I found a little bit disappointing this season, Hooky, is probably the lack of spectators for particularly the first half of the season. I thought switching this into summer, we might seem to get a few more people out there. But obviously with summer also comes people with lots of different commitments.
And wanting
to play themselves, and you're going to always have that issue and run into that issue. It was better towards the end of the season. I think our last game at Glenelg against Kionga, we had a lot of people there, and I don't know whether or not that's to do with the Kionga-Royal Adelaide rivalry, which just means members show a little bit more interest, but I do think it is a bit sad and a bit disappointing that we couldn't get more spectators out there. But the one thing that I will say, and it comes with the ugly, is I found that our podcast did mean I had a lot more members, a lot more interested, and they might have not been out there, but they were still listening and keeping posted with our scores and wanting to know what happened. So when it did come to finals, I did notice we had a big spectatorship at finals, but I still find it disappointing that during the minor round, there's probably not as much support out there as you would like.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's an interesting one. I mean, we had some articles going in the paper on Sunday, and I know that's not the panacea. It's going to solve everything. I do feel like some better attempts at creating some more real-time updates. I can turn on YouTube or whatever it is through Facebook, and I can watch a Division 4 reserves football game, you know, the live stream of that. A lot harder to cover golf, granted, but I do think that's something I would like them to see go forward. That particular issue I wouldn't call my ugly, but I think your point's well made that you're probably also making the point that we've moved from the heart of winter back into this autumn type model, and whether that's the best fit, and that's going to be something that I think will be assessed over the coming years. My ugly, Soph, is pace of play. That's a huge problem in all golf at the moment, but the problem is no bigger anywhere than in pennant golf. We got to a situation where matches couldn't be completed, and there's just no excuse for that. And I don't think there's any one group to blame, but we don't have to run it right up to the edge of sunset. I mean, it's not like we're trying to fill a TV window and run it into the 6 o'clock news. So there's two problems here. One is that the groups are too tight. I think we're having 6 minute intervals between matches going off, and that just doesn't work in singles match play when you have shots depending on, you know, who's further away, and often there's a measure and those sorts of things. So that can slow down the pace of play. 6 minutes is too tight. Marshalling around these courses is obviously non-existent because matches are drifting on, and you've been part of them, so where matches are drifting on well over 4.5 hours, and that's just hard to get your head around for two ball matches. I think course setup is a problem. So I've probably voiced this opinion before, but why are we playing off the blue tees for a Bonner Cat match? It's completely unnecessary to be having everyone going back that far. So I think, you know, it is difficult for the public courses in particular that have to pay for their green fees, and they probably don't want to have to pay for an extra one or two to be able to spread the field out a little bit more efficiently over the course. But I just reckon there has to be and it's probably the association's responsibility, the governing body's responsibility, to make pace of play a real factor for the competition going forward. Got to be prepared to find some independent people who are going to marshal the courses and maybe start to administer some warnings and some penalties for slow play, because we can't have the situation like we had at Glenelg, which was Royal Adelaide and Kionga in the Pike Cup, where the matches were called off still with about half an hour of play left to go. That's just totally unacceptable.
Well, it's not good when you're standing on the tee, Hooky, and immediately the pipe players apparently turned to each other and thought, I don't think we're going to get this game in. I think that day, unfortunately, the Sanderson Cup, which was just before the Pike Cup, the Bonner went off first, took us 50 minutes to play two holes. I think we had our whole team on the second hole at one point waiting to tee off. And yeah, it's a bit disappointing when stuff like that happens. And I agree, sometimes course setup can get in the way as well. Playing off the blues for the Bonner is probably not the best decision. I mean, the girls play off the reds and it can definitely speed up. But agreed, I think as well, the 6 minutes in between, the 6 minute intervals is just not enough. Almost some people haven't even played their approach shots if they're looking for balls off the tee and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Anyhow, that is something to address. But by and large, Soph, it's been a great competition. It was great to see the emergence of Mount Osmond. It was great to see the continued improvement of Tea Tree Gully. Yeah, you know, my heart is with these Tier 2 clubs, and it was great to see both of them really perform well. But you couldn't deny Kionga. I mean, it would have been just as reasonable to say the Grange potentially deserved to win that final after the minor round they had. But Kionga at home were always going to be a tough threat. They're a wonderful, wonderful Simpson Cup team. And then, of course, the Grange in the Sanderson Cup knocking over Royal Adelaide. Congratulations to them. So if the big news around South Australian golf for the last couple of weeks has been the redevelopment of the North Adelaide Golf Course, the protest has probably been the biggest highlight. It's all against the backdrop of will we see LIV returning to Adelaide in coming years? And that's a question that's yet to be answered definitively. We probably suspect that if it is back, it's going to be in something of a reduced form to what it's historically been here. But let's start with the protest. What did you make of the way that played out here in Adelaide over the past couple of weeks?
Well, it has been pretty wild, hasn't it, Hooky? I've got plenty of friends that aren't into golf, and apparently it was just clogging up their newsfeed on Instagram and TikTok and everything with all the footage of some of, I want to say, the violence that was happening around that area. And look, I don't agree with what the protesters are saying, but I also think, and I'm a strong believer in freedom of speech, so I think people should be able to protest if they want to. I probably don't like the way it went. And I mean, I'm talking about a lot of my girlfriends who were going and watching footy at Adelaide Oval, and I would often walk through that section and were too nervous and too afraid to walk past those kind of protesters with what was going on. And I don't think I don't think that's a positive, and I don't think it's probably the best way to get your point across. But look, I think they're open to protest, and if that's their position, they should be able to do it, but potentially not in the way that it went about. I don't actually know. Did the pro shop that went up in flames, did we ever find out if whether or not that was to do with the protesters? I know that two people got arrested.
Yeah, I haven't heard, to be honest, Sophie. And I think you're in big groups, and it was a big group of protesters, you're always going to get a rogue element. And I think by and large, those managing the protests handled those things. They handled them retrospectively rather than proactively, but they did handle them pretty well after, you know, the threats against the Premier is just totally inappropriate. And I think they dealt with those sorts of things reasonably well, if probably a little bit, you know, they should have seen it coming, maybe would be a reasonable accusation against them. I mean, the protesters, they got some momentum, didn't they? So by and large, they ticked a lot of boxes with the message that they were trying to get across. I do feel like that the counter argument has been poorly articulated by the government in particular. I mean, they almost seem like that they brought in the Australian Open, which we'll talk about, but they seemed so set on the fact that the economy of this golf course relies upon a professional male tournament to stack it up. And nothing could be further from the truth. I think about Barmboogle Dunes, 7 Mile Beach, King Island, Tara Easy. All of these courses are destination courses which has no interest whatsoever in hosting a professional men's tournament. But they would be fantastic places to go and travel and play golf. And that really should be what the model is for the North Adelaide Golf Course. You want it to be an opportunity for the public of South Australia to pay and play at a top-end course. At the moment, we have 4 golf clubs that are tier one, and they're all hopelessly oversubscribed. There's somewhere between 5 and a 10-year wait list for any of Glenelg and Cooyonga and Royal Adelaide and the Grange. You cannot get on them. So it makes perfect sense to have a model where someone can play a tier one level course and do it on a pay-for-play model. You also want to have a situation where this course is something that's going to attract the golf tourists, like the people who go to Barmboogle Dunes, like the people who go to 7 Mile Beach, like the people who are going to go to the cliffs at on Kangaroo Island. These places are destination places, and North Adelaide, you would like to think, is one of those, going to become one of those places. I think that's, I've had this concern before that I don't know that they're going to necessarily nail that, but that's that is a huge economic boost for South Australia, and the investment makes sense. And I just feel like that has never been properly articulated by the government.
Yeah, that's fair, and I agree. I don't know if you've been at Wembley in WA, but it's an amazing public course with a huge driving range. There's a restaurant underneath. I think there's a Shanks going on, and it's always packed. And it's always completely busy, and it's not necessarily busy with people who play golf 7 days a week, but it's people just giving golf a go, or even just families coming out and doing a bit of putt-putt and then coming and having lunch with dinner with their kids and having a little bit of fun and playing those kind of games and that kind of thing. And I think that would be awesome for something in the center of the city that people can just go along to. But then anyone coming in for business, if there's just a course that is 10-minute walk from the CBD, you're going to get people coming out and just paying even for 9 holes before they jet out somewhere else. So I think it's awesome for Adelaide, and I really do strongly believe that it's something that should be happening. And I agree with you. I don't think it's been articulated in the best way. And I think the announcement of the Australian Open and professional golf didn't really help because, I mean, people are having these protests. I'm going to take a stab in the dark and say they're probably not avid golfers and couldn't care less if Rory McIlroy was coming down here to hit a drive 300 and something metres. I don't think they'd care at all. So I don't think that was probably the best response, and I would have leaned more into what can this golf course do for your average person or your person who's not even just picked up a golf club before.
Here's the argument as well that I think would have summed a lot of it up. I had a conversation with James Sutherland a couple of weeks ago. Just drop a name there, Soph, if you want me to reach down to pick it back up. But I spoke to him at the Royal Adelaide Club dinner, and the one thing he said to me was that he rang Adam Scott just before this announcement was about to break, because if he was interviewed during a PGA Tour event and someone brought up about the fact that North Adelaide is going to host the Australian Open, that he just wanted to make sure that he was available to handle it. Adam Scott's first question back is, what is happening to the par three course? And James could tell him, well, that won't get affected. All 18 holes are there. And he said, fine, no problem at all. I'll sell the rest. So isn't that amazing that Adam Scott, of all people, saw that, yeah, it's wonderful to take the South Course and take it into something pretty special, but there's got to be a place for young kids and families. And that would have, I would have just, shame James didn't record that phone conversation, because that would have been a pretty handy thing to play back, wouldn't it? So, yeah, I, and in isolation, so if I think it is going to be amazing that we're going to have the women's and the men's Australian Open here. It'll be tremendous to watch. I do wonder how the course will stack up, in particular in 2028, the end of 2028. It's going to be a real challenge to have this course fully ready and operational and bedded in by then. I mean, I've had friends who've just been to Seven Mile Beach and said, look, it's probably two more years away from being a really good playable golf course. So that's the challenge. But my understanding is the check was substantial. And, you know, for a sport like golf, government intervention is really important. And, you know, I'm never going to be critical of the Premier for investing in golf here in South Australia.
No, definitely not, Ben. Should we move on?
Hey, I've got one more thing I've got to tell you about. I have to give full plaudits to the most savvy media player going on around the North Adelaide golf course at the moment, and that is Kevin Norton. Who is Kevin Norton? Well, Kevin Norton was the president of the North Adelaide Golf Club between about 2014 and 2019, and he made a return in 2025. And knowing how I know Kevin, this is no surprise. Kevin's one of the sharpest, most insightful media people who have worked in and around Adelaide media for 30 years. He's been ABC, he's been in Daily, he is across it. Now, Soph, you would have appreciated this. There was the press conference with the Premier making the announcement a couple of weeks ago, and there was all the dignitaries that gather around in behind, and some were shuffled out quite a long way either side. So Lucy Hood, the member for Adelaide, way off to the far right. Evan Kirkman, the head of the PGA of Australia, way off to the left and out of the shot. James Sutherland in behind. But the other bloke in behind, like he was the second most important person there just behind the Premier, Kevin Norton. Absolutely positioning himself beautifully. I mean, getting yourself in the right spot for a photo, that was an absolute power move by Kev. So you got to hand it to Kev right alongside the Premier. Now, North Adelaide Golf Club, not paying a cent for this, I wouldn't have thought. They're getting the greatest sweetheart deal of all time. They'll be getting preferred D times, probably a discount rate as well. And the membership of North Adelaide Golf Club is closed. So here we are, North Adelaide Golf Club, right alongside the Premier in lockstep with him, probably because they're going to get the best deal of all time. It's harder to get in to North Adelaide Golf Club than it is to the Adelaide Club, Soph. You and I would have more likelihood getting in on North Terrace there. So love Kevin Norton, doing a great job for his club. And it's one of the most beautiful things when I can see someone just playing the media, like Kevin's played them absolutely spectacularly. Just my hat's off to Kev Norton. Great job, my man. So let's do a quick tour around the world and what's going on with international golf. Why don't you kick us off with where we are at with the LPGA Tour?
Yeah, so the LPGA Tour actually had a break this week, kind of a bit like us, Hookie, just needed a bit of a rest. But they did play last week, and obviously we didn't have a podcast last week, so we didn't get time to comment on it. But it was the Queen City Championship, and I want to give a shout out to Lottie Woad. So incredible. She's only 22 years old. This time last year, she was playing college golf, and she shot a final round one under to fight off people like Nellie Korda, Jin Young Ko, to get her second win on the LPGA Tour at 22 years old. That's just an incredible achievement. It was, I think she shot 12 under all up, so it was a pretty low scoring tournament. and it's a pretty exciting one for Lottie.
What about the Epson Tour?
Epson Tour, well, this one's an exciting one for South Australia. Caitlin Pearce, our very own, at Copper Rock Championship last week, finished T9. She was actually the leader after 36 holes, Hooky, so I think she'll be a little bit disappointed with her final round not getting the win. It was Fiona Zhu at 13 under that got the win. But for Caitlin, I think this is a massive achievement. It's incredible. The only way you can ever work out how to win a tournament is to go through things like these, lose after having the lead and having a bit of a, I think it was about 3 shots, a substantial lead after 36 holes. But the only way to learn about what your body does and what your mind does in those situations is to go through it. So I think this is huge for Caitlin, and I wish her all the best for the rest of the Epson Tour, because it's if she finishes in the top 15, Ben, she can get a spot on the LBGA Tour, and I know that's what Caitlin is looking to do.
Well, it's why she gave away a spot in the Australian Open, which I think might have got Crystal Blum into the tournament certainly for a period of time. But yeah, she is very determined to make it big in the US. And the other thing I'd say, Soph, the only way you can win a tournament is to by being in contention in a tournament. So the fact that she's getting herself into those good positions, I think there's plenty of positives to take out of it. I'll just quickly run across what has happened in men's golf on the US Tour. It was the Byron Nelson CJ Cup, which is two events that have become a little bit awkward for the tour, and they've combined them into one particularly awkward event. They hosted it at TPC Craig Ranch, which underwent a $25 million US upgrade to try and make it more challenging for the professional golfer. And Wyndham Clark has won it at 30 under, including an 11 under 60 in the final round. So Lanny Watkins has done up this course, determined to make it tougher for the professional golfer, and they've just absolutely slaughtered it. Now, I understand that, you know, they got a lot of rain, so it was soft, and the weather conditions made it relatively playable, but yeah, I will continue to beat the drum that we have a massive problem with men's professional golf and the distance the ball is going at the moment. Fancy spending $25 million to toughen up your course, and it went from 31 under to 30 under. There's course setup issues there as well, for sure. But anyway, the Sudal Open was played in Switzerland. Richard Sterney won that at 19 under. Our own Jack Buchanan finished at 11 under in a tie for 24th. So that's another really solid result for Jack, not just making a cut, but going deep inside the top 30. And in the Asian Tour, they had the Korea Open. It was won by Jiho Yang at 9 under, only 7 players under par. So this was in complete contrast to what we saw on the US Tour, Soph. But our own Jack Thompson finished at 6 over in a tie for 31. So not a bad round for him either. Just before we just reflect back on the PGA Championship, which I do want to do, you can tell us a little bit about where Regan Denton is at a tournament in the US, which I think is supported by Nelly Korda.
Yeah, well, it's the Nelly Korda Invitational, so I hope it's supported by Nelly Korda.
That's how well it's supported by her.
In fact, I know I spoke to Regan just before she headed off. She's just starting her US campaign through some of those amateur events. And then I know she'll be back for a period of time in August before heading to LSU to compete in college. But Regan was very excited because apparently Nelly Korda actually goes to the opening night event. So I believe she met Nelly Korda, her idol, and she's very excited about it. She'd taken a photo of the poster that she has hanging up on her wall of Nelly Korda. And I know she is stoked and very much excited for this US campaign for her to get off and running. Regan is currently sitting T10 at even par through 12 holes, but play was actually suspended during the first round. So we'll keep posted, and we'll probably have to talk about her result next week. But it's an incredible achievement from Regan already to be sitting at T10 in a first event over there.
Let's just touch on the PGA Championship. It's well over a week behind us now. An incredible tournament was won by Englishman Aaron Rye. He won by 3 strokes at 9 under. John Rahm was a part of the runner-up pack at 6 under. So far, I've been out and bought myself a couple of black gloves to go and play my golf with from here on in.
A pink plastic tee as well, Hooky.
Yes. What did you make of it? Interesting result. He's not the longest player. He's certainly not the best player. I think he was 44th in the world. He played in an alternate event on the US Tour the week before. So certainly I don't think anyone had Aaron Rye is amongst the favourites, but it's an incredible result for someone. It's actually his second tournament win this year, Soph. He also won the par 3 contest before the Masters. So, yeah, he's making a bit of a habit of winning, but I don't think even he would have seen the PGA champ.
No, look, probably not. I mean, we do have to acknowledge, like, he is top 50 in the world, which doesn't mean he's just...
44 before that week.
Yeah, he's not someone just walking off the street and winning the PGA Championship. He is an incredible golfer, and He probably didn't expect to see himself lifting up the trophy, but I loved his press conference about his wife, who's actually also a professional golfer, and spoke about how it was really her that basically gave him the belief that it was possible on the final day for him to lift up that trophy finally. And look, I think I was excited to see him win. I'm not going to lie, Hooky, he wasn't on my radar like at all. And in fact, when I saw his name at the top of the leaderboard, he was kind of one of those people that you just went, yeah, he might hang on for a top 10. Yeah, yeah, he'll blow up. But he did not blow up. He had the absolute opposite of a blow up. He played that course unbelievable. It was tight fairways, big greens, but tucked pins. And it really was a battle and a grind in terms of some pins players were saying, because the greens were so firm, they couldn't attack anything. And a good shot, you'd still have 20 foot. And it was all in that lag putting. And that's what he did. He was holding 10 foot, 15 footers. I mean, he held a 58 footer on the 17th hole. So his putting was unbelievable, and just tee to green and staying so patient. He just didn't look rattled at all in that final round. In fact, it looked like he'd been there before when he had never been there before. And he looked so composed the whole time. And it wasn't until he hit the green on 18 and finished his two putt and walked off that he actually even remotely showed a bit of emotion. But even then, it felt like he thought this might not be real when he was waiting for the final groups to come through, until he really realized that he just won the PGA Championship.
He did win the PGA Championship. Just one thing I'll touch on. A little bit too much hand-holding with the wife afterwards. A little bit too much of a display of affection. Yeah, you know, hug and a kiss and all of those sorts of things. But let's move on. Get your card signed, mate. Yes or no, will he win a second major?
No. I'm going no. Sorry, Hooky. He's probably just not long enough. I also think this course setup was interesting, and it was very exciting. I mean, on the Sunday morning when you woke up bright and early at, you know, 2 a.m. in the morning, you had no idea who was going to win. There were so many players within four shots of the leader. And I think the course was a course that I didn't expect to see a lot of double bogeys or big blowouts, but I also didn't expect to see a lot of birdies, which just meant it kind of was anyone's game. If you could just stay patient out there and you could two-putt your way around that course, if you could just get away with it, no one looked like they really could catch up and follow you. And that's kind of what he did. And I don't know if that's really sustainable in a lot of these other courses that are played in the majors.
Talking about one major winner, Cam Smith. What did you make of his tournament? A real return to form.
I know Cam Smith has had a change in coach, and with everything that's going on in LIV at the moment, I think Cam Smith would be thinking, hang on a second here. I've been so focused on the team aspect of LIV, which I think is great, and promoting golf within Australia, that it almost feels like it's shaken him, and it's made him realise that, hang on a second, if I even want to remotely think about getting back on the PGA, I've got to get myself back in shape, I've got to get my game better, and I've got to prove that I belong on that PGA tour. Because for me, Hooky, it felt like after he won that Open at St Andrews, he jumped onto the LIV, he just has not been the player that Cam Smith was.
Minwoo Lee?
Minwoo Lee is always an exciting one. I like watching him play, but I'm not going to lie, Hooky. I saw him on day one at the top of the leaderboard. He might have been sitting at about T2, T3, but he was close to leading the tournament. And I just never think he's going to do it. And I just never think he's going to get it over the line. And I wish for Minwoo Lee, because he comes across as the nicest guy ever, that one day he will. But at the moment, there's just too many holes in his game, and I just don't think he's going to get it over the line.
His game is not major-proof, Soph. It is just not consistent enough for long enough under the highest pressure against the best players on the toughest courses, and remains to be seen whether he can, I guess, bring that all together. Soph, so good to be back, mate. Always love your expertise and insight. Reckon we might give ourselves a few days and do it all again next week.
Yeah, let's get back on the roll of things, Hooky. I am keen to speak everything golf with you, and I've loved the break, but I'm ready to go again.
We will see you all next week. Thanks for listening. Look forward to your company next time. Good on you, Soph. See ya.
Thanks, Hooky.
With the last putt sunk, that's a wrap on this golf edition of Hooked on Sport. Thanks for listening. Help us meet more golfers just like you by following us and leaving a review. We look forward to your company on the next golf edition of Hooked on Sport.